All right. Thank you for everyone for being on the call. I apologize, such late notice. Usually we don't send the schedule out and have a call scheduled the very next day. We typically don't have call scheduled until Wednesday and Thursday. Of course, every Monday is the IAP onboarding call. If you have any questions about the onboarding process for the ops team, the ladies in the office, that is every Monday. The call never changes. So anyways, today we're going to be talking about, you know, frustrations that you will experience as an IAP during the loan closing process, and just kind of frustrations in general. And this is just kind of to anticipate those things. I know we've had a lot of closings with a lot of people in the team. It's great. And again, these are just some things I want to go over with you guys that you may get frustrated on, your borrowers may get frustrated on. It is what it is. This is how real estate deals work, so we're going to kind of run through these things. But also, I want to go through these things to the team because, you know, a lot of during my day as I'm speaking to everyone's borrowers or recapping on docs, I really feel like sometimes I'm a therapist. You know, I'm constantly just kind of letting people know when they get frustrated at something, you know, hey, I understand where you're coming from. That's the first thing that comes out of my mouth. Yep, I totally understand where you're at on that. You always want to relate to the person, of course, and then just kind of explain to them how this works or how this process works. Even sometimes you'll run across borrowers that are very experienced borrowers. They've borrowed a lot of money from a lot of different lenders, but this is their first time going through the process with this lender. So it's just communication is key in this business so people don't get frustrated. But bullet point number one, you know, things that you're going to get frustrated on, the loans email is going to come back and tell you you don't have a deal. I think probably everyone on this phone has been there. And that is one of the biggest things in this industry is this is such a crazy business. Everybody you run into has a deal. Like if you go to a networking event and there's 50 real estate investors there because I did this. This is how I got started doing this 7 years ago. Or 100 real estate, every single one of them there has a deal, according to them, but not in actually the real world. So that is like trying to vet this stuff out. But what I can tell you, just keep it real simple. Someone's got decent credit, you know, 650 or higher, a lot of liquidity, some real estate experience, that's the one that has a deal. If you're dealing with someone with like lower FICO, really under 600, or they don't have any money to put into the deal, that's just, it's really this, all this comes down to is money. How much money do you have to put into the deal? If you don't have any, that might be the first question you want to ask when you do an intake form, but you know, that's really what this comes down to. There's all these rehab lenders out there that advertise 100% financing and all this crazy stuff, and there's no such thing as that. And the reason we really don't advertise 100% financing is because it's still misleading. You're dealing with the general public. They still have to come to closing with their closing costs. You know, so it's not 101% financing. But someone could offer 100% financing on a property, but it doesn't mean that lender is going to cover your closing costs and they're not. So that's kind of why we do weekly lender calls with all of the lenders. Like we probably have over 100 of them recorded. And we'll keep recording more just in case you ever want to jump on and really hear from a lender how they evaluate deals and think about things. We do have a couple programs on our product sheet that do offer 100% there, say, you know, up to 100% financing or close to 100% financing, and it's still just a marketing gimmick as well. But on those program write-ups, we have on there, oh, yeah, they'll do 100%, but they're going to cross-collateralize your personal home. There's always a catch to that. And nobody really wants to cross-collateralize their personal home or go into a situation where it makes them feel uncomfortable because it's a business transaction. So just remember, if someone from the loans email emails you back and just says, look, you know, here's the situation with this loan. We've been down this path before. I know it can be a little frustrating, but it is part of the learning process. You know, that we're always here with you, but you're not going to really learn this until you do it. So what I can say about that, I know that may be frustrating to anyone who that's happened to, but what's really even more frustrating is working on deals for years and months and months and months that are not deals. And you are just spinning your wheels and collecting documents and coordinating with people. And you're working on something that's never going to fund. And I did that. I personally did that for years and struggled a lot. And I had to learn a lot of these pitfalls just from doing this for a while and how to vet things out and how to make this work and coordinate with parties. So bullet point number one, loans may come back to you and say, look, this isn't looking like a deal. They'll always explain why. Now, some deals are really, really close. You're just really close. Like, say maybe the person has the money to do it, but, you know, maybe they don't have a lot of maybe rehab experience with the rehab deal. You know, all different rehab lenders evaluate things differently. And again, we quote people based off of what we see on the intake form. We don't collect documents from them typically unless there's something like a red flag that we see that we need to verify something. But sometimes someone from the loan team will come back and say, look, this is real close because, yeah, according to these, the as-is value, the rehab cost, and the ARV they have on here, it looks like they have enough money for the deal. But if this thing doesn't appraise where they're saying it's going to, and chances are it may not, because, you know, appraisers, there's a lot of crazy appraisers out there that mess up deals. They're not going to have enough money for the deal. And a lot of time when someone's a new rehabber, lenders will advertise like, hey, we can go up to 80% of the purchase price. But I can tell you I've been involved in a lot of deals for new time rehabbers. And a lot of times through the underwriting process, the lender cuts it down to like, oh, we're only going to do 70% of the purchase price. I had a lender once cut it down to a bar where they were only going to fund 50% of the purchase price. Thank God she had the money on hand because everyone was just, you know, working very, very hard on this. And those things happen sometimes through the underwriting process. So that's why, you know, things may or may not be a deal. But as long as we're on the same page as people and we, you know, whatever manager's monitor loans email comes back to the IEP, lets them know what's going on. Here's what may happen during the underwriting process. We make it very clear to the borrower, this is what may happen. If the borrower is still okay with it, we'll take it start to close and see where it goes. So second kind of bullet point, there's a lot of back and forth in this business, and there probably isn't a lot of businesses. I think maybe a lot of back and forth in this business just because you're dealing with so many different parties. I know that can be frustrating, but this is just how the business works. You know, when we go and get quotes on the real estate side from our lenders, you know, we ask our basic questions we ask on our intake forms that are already just, you know, one page. Sometimes the lenders come back and will ask us questions like, well, we see the roof is made out of this, and we're not sure if that's durable enough. Or they may come back and ask really kind of odd questions like that where you're thinking, hey, that's kind of odd. You know, but if a lender asks you a question in this business and you don't answer it, they're not going to do anything with your loan. So it's not an optional thing. If a lender asks you something, you have to answer it or it's going to go nowhere. So again, with the back and forth, you know, you may be a little frustrated that you filled out the intake form and, hey, someone from management is still asking more questions, probably because the lender asked the questions to us, or just maybe we saw something that's a little bit of a red flag on the form. It's just to get clarification. Again, we try to keep the intake forms as short as we possibly can, but still getting enough information so that we know exactly what we're dealing with, so we don't just push this person into a loan and then things go wrong. So there's definitely a balance there. Let's get enough information so we know exactly what we're dealing with and can quote them. But let's not have them fill out a 7-page application at the same time because the point of this is try to make it quick. Third bullet point, the quoting process basically and the final outcome of the loan. And I kind of went over this a little bit earlier. You know, just to kind of hit it again, we have these intake forms for every type of loan we do here. Bridge, rehab, ground of construction, permanent financing, blanket loans, which is a blanket submission, and wholesale loans, which we don't do much of because most people can just assign their contracts and don't need a wholesale loan. So we have a short intake form for all of them. But we don't typically collect any documents in order to get someone a quote, and that's the point of the quote. We take the information that the borrower has given us off the form, we send it to lenders that we know that can do it, and we devise a quote for them without really collecting any documents. So just please keep in your head, I keep repeating, that we're not collecting any documents. None of this information on this form they filled out or typed on, whatever they did with, is being verified. You know, someone could say my credit's 680, and I've done 3 flips in the past 3 years, and here's the as-is value of the property, the rehab budget, and the ARV. But I can't tell you guys how many times, basically every time when you go into a loan, you know, there's steps throughout the loan process and, you know, on the lender's application, there's a credit authorization form so they can pull their credit. Well, the credit didn't come back 680. It came back at 600. That changes the quote. You go through the deal more. They don't have HUD ones to prove that they have actually done three deals in the past 3 years, or they were actually a silent partner and you can't prove it. Well, now that changes the quote. They don't have three flips that they can prove, because you always have to prove it with documentation, always. The property didn't appraise where they felt it was going to. That change, that, so things are going to change, but just keep in mind, you know, if borrowers call you frustrated or something, this is just how this business works. You know, we try to provide a quote up front based off the information they give us, and we do that as a courtesy because we want to get the process moving quickly. But that quote is based on the information they give us. So if they give us inaccurate information, our quote's going to be inaccurate. It's just like a computer. If you put the wrong inputs into it, it's going to spit out the wrong output. It's the same exact thing here. So one other thing I want to mention, we do not pull credit here at 11 Capital Finance. We don't pull credit. We don't pull credit. We don't pull credit. Now, I get some of you on the phone may be residential licensed mortgage brokers and may already have your own credit system, or maybe you're already a commercial broker and you have your own credit pull system. That's fine. If that's how you want to work with your clients, that's fine. The real reason we don't pull credit here, to be honest with you guys, is because it costs the company $30 every time I pulled someone's credit. And if I did that every single time with all the submissions we get every day with all the quotes, I would bankrupt us. There's no way I can pull people's credit like that. And honestly, I don't want to, because the lender is going to pull their credit anyways. They're not just going to go off the credit report we give them, even if it is a verified credit report. They're not going to do that. They always have to pull their own credit. So there's no point for the borrower to get their credit pulled twice. And I always tell people that. So just let your borrowers know, we do not pull credit here. Borrowers do happen to get frustrated about that when their quotes come back and change. And they're like, well, you initially gave me a quote saying this. And I was like, yes, it was based on this FICO score that was on the intake form. But, you know, now after you filled out the lender's application and they pulled credit, I always come back with a revised quote or another manager, another manager that is quarterbacking the deal to a close will. And I do that on purpose because I want to make sure you're okay with this quote now based on your credit, because the next step of this is you order, like, well, we'll order the appraisal, the lender will order the appraisal, and you pay for it. So before they go and pay for an appraisal, I want to make sure we're all still on the same page with the quote. So that's why we quote people so many times throughout the process, because we, again, just want to make sure we're all on the same page, like overdoing it. And again, the appraisal is always on the borrower's behalf. The borrower always pays for that up front. That's really the only thing they ever pay for up front. So before they spend money on that, I just repeat the quote with them like three times, call them to go over it, just so we're all on the same page. All right. I kind of already touched on the fourth bullet point, just specific questions, you know, management may ask you. You may submit an intake form, and we may come back with more questions. And that's because sometimes, first of all, I love the extra detail that any of you ladies and gentlemen put on these intake forms. They are meant to be short. I know I keep saying that. But, I mean, if you're talking to a client and, you know, they start mentioning, you know, stuff to you about a foreclosure or a bankruptcy or any of those things that they've had, if you can get additional information from them, like, well, when was that issue solved? You know, like sometimes I'll see people say that, oh, yeah, I had a bankruptcy, foreclosure, BK, whatever the thing was, a chapter, and it'll say, like, they had it, but at the same time, like, we don't know if it's actually resolved. If it's not resolved, they're not going to be able to get a loan if those things aren't resolved. And typically they need to be resolved for 2 years, and then we can help them in the secondary market. So those are just sometimes things that we see, or sometimes I'll see stuff about tax liens, just certain questions sometimes raise flags. A lot of times I see if it's a refinance, people will put either the date the property was purchased, but not the purchase price it was purchased for, or one or the other. So then we got to come back and get that information. And that information is so, so important, because if you don't disclose this stuff up front to a lender, all these questions we have on these intake forms, if you don't disclose this stuff up front to a lender, just so you know, they're not going to ask you. It's not their job to disseminate the loan perfectly 100%. Lenders are under the impression, as brokers representing our clients, that we're going to get all that information from the borrower. And that's why sometimes I feel bad for borrowers that deal directly with lenders who will call me with horror stories. The lender is not going to sit there and vet out your loan. A lot of you may have been in that experience that are on the phone right now. You know, they just assume if you've ever had any issue in the past, you're going to disclose up front. But at the same time, borrowers don't know, like, all the information that lenders need. It's just a lack of communication. A lot of the things that lenders need to know are not even questions on their loan applications, which you would think the point of loan application is to vet out all those things. But I see it happen every single day. I have borrowers that call me, you know, hey, I went to this lender and I went through the whole process. I told my loan rep this up front. They said it was okay. I got an underwriting. They denied my loan. You know, so just the point of these intake forms and why they have to be filled out so accurately is just to try and make sure these things don't happen, because that's a really painful conversation to have with somebody. None of the IEPs obviously have to do that. If that was ever something that had to happen, you know, it would be someone in management that would have to call the borrower, the client, and explain. But to run with someone throughout their whole entire transaction, you get really close to them, be working on their docs, dealing with their contacts, and then for underwriting, for some reason, to deny their loan, that's not a good conversation to have with somebody. You're going to have to think of a backup plan pretty quickly. So next bullet point, another thing that can be frustrating, the appraisal process, and there's a lot of reasons why. The first I really want to say is, I guess, not just the fact that there's some really, really bad appraisers out there that have horribly messed up deals for us and for, I'm sure, a lot of people out there. But in general, as a broker, you don't get to pick the appraiser. Like, we have no say over who the appraiser is. So something I'm always letting borrowers know when they get mad about the appraiser. Lenders really want it to be like a third-party thing. They don't want the borrower to know the appraiser either. So a lot of times borrowers will want to pick their own appraiser, and they can't. They really can't. It's every lender we work with has different either appraisal companies they work with direct, or the new trend these days is appraisal management companies. So basically the borrower, basically the lender will order an appraisal on the borrower's behalf through what they call an AMC, appraisal management company. And the borrower actually pays a little bit of a premium for that, because the appraisal management company is someone that goes out, like Appraisal Nation or ISS, or there's all these other companies popping up, and they will actually locate the appraisers that could do it, in the best turnaround time, and they'll manage them and make sure they get the report in. But, you know, it's typically like $150, $200 more for an appraisal when you go through an AMC. So that can be frustrating to borrowers as well, but it's just something I explain to them on every file. This is how this lender works. We have these three AMC options. You tell me who you want to use, and I'll let the lender know. One thing our lenders are actually doing with us now, which is a little different, because I would say, like, back in 2011, this was like a huge no-no, but now it's kind of changing, is few of our lenders are actually connecting us with the AMCs to order appraisals on their behalf. And although it's obviously a little bit of extra work on our part, because we have to now communicate with the AMC in addition to everyone else in the deal, I actually like it better, because I can update the borrower a lot quicker than, you know, if I have to go through my rep who has to go through underwriting and get an update from the appraisal management company who then reaches out to the appraiser. That's a real inefficient flow of communication, just to get one person on the deal and update about where's their appraisal and when it's coming back. Prior to really dealing with the AMCs, it's kind of a new thing for us over the past month. I would, instead of that whole chain of going through the lender to get to the AMC, the appraiser, I would just call the borrower and just say, hey, you know, the appraiser called you, or whoever the point of contact was, do you know when they're coming out? Do you know when the report is supposed to be back? If not, can you find out so I can track it in our system? Because I want to make sure that when, you know, the appraiser told the point of contact it was going to be back by the 18th, I want to make sure I'm emailing the lender, like, hey, they said it was going to be back today. Is it back? Because you'd be surprised. Sometimes lenders just don't keep track of this stuff. Like, you know, they don't keep track of when the report's going to come back. And several times I'm emailing, like, hey, when's the report going to be back? And they're like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, well, maybe someone should reach out, you know, or I'll do it. So the point is, it's really nice now that we're actually in contact with the AMCs that do manage appraisers. We're still not dealing directly with the appraiser because it's through the AMC, but it's actually much more efficient. So that's one thing we are is changing to kind of solve that frustration. Obviously, the appraisal cost, though, goes up a little bit because they have to go through an AMC. It is $150 to $200 more. To be honest with you, most borrowers understand if it's going to have this appraisal come back in a more timely manner and with better results. A lot of borrowers do understand. One thing about the appraisal process that can be frustrating that we have no control over, of course, is if the property does not appraise. You know, that's not something that we obviously have control over. We're not the appraiser. Sorry, we're not the AMC. I can tell you, whenever it doesn't appraise, I always try to contact, of course, you know, the borrower, the realtor, see if we can get comps. I've been working with ISS lately a lot, their appraisal management company, and they have been really, really diligent. I've been very impressed with them on kind of the accountability they have with their appraisers. And I actually have gotten a couple reports changed by them. I wouldn't say the values went up hugely, but they did slightly go up after comps were submitted. So I've been very impressed with them. There's other appraisal management companies that I have had to deal with or I've, you know, dealt with through lenders or just straight appraisers that just, you know, well, according to the borrower, they did a horrible job. But you just their lack of response and emails and the lender asking them to do things, and they're just straight up like, no, they won't change anything. Revisions, you know, the appraiser is not someone that works for us. They're not an hourly employee. They're an independent contractor. Just like all these parties in a transaction are, they're all third parties. We can't force them to do anything, but I can tell you sometimes appraisers royally do mess up deals. Sometimes properties are not at the value that the client thinks they are, you know, and you just really have to go through the comps and study the appraisals. But at the same time, that being said, I've been involved in a lot of deals where I feel the client has a really, really good point on everything they're bringing up from the appraisal. I think they submitted a ton of documentation. I've gone through myself. I've had people send me receipts for money they spent on this, 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 and the appraiser just threw it in the trash and didn't care. There's nothing I can do about that. I can't fire the appraiser. I have no control over the appraiser, so there's nothing we can do about that, and I understand that is frustrating. When you get in a situation like that with a client, the only thing you can say to them is, look, the only thing to do is just to order a new appraisal. You know, I know that stinks, but that's the only thing to do if you feel very strong about your value. It's very, very slim that an appraiser is going to change their value on a property. If it's a 1-4 unit property, it's not a huge deal. You're talking about, you know, $500 to $700 for a new appraisal. If you're talking about like a pure commercial property, say a very large mixed-use property or a self-storage facility, I mean, someone could pay $3,500 to $5,000 for an appraisal like that, depending on how big the property is and actually what the type is. That's obviously not something someone can just repay for. That's a very large fee. So if the property doesn't appraise in that situation, it's just not going to appraise. Hopefully the deal will still work out. We could just lower the loan amount. It still works. But those are things that come up in deals that cause frustrations. Next bullet point is really kind of the document collection process. Again, there's a lot of back and forth in this business. I try to make all of the document lists we send to borrowers from all the lenders we work with. We actually have them all typed out in emails nicely. So I try to make them very clear, and they're all they start at the top with here's what's needed to order the appraisal. Those items are always at the top and asterisked and usually in red. And then there's another section under that list, everything else needed to close. And it's all nicely numbered. It's all nicely numbered and laid out. So we try to make our list very clear. I've taken really all the lenders we work with, I take all of their documentation lists, and I think we make them a little bit more clear because most lenders don't break it up like that. Also, a lot of the lists that lenders send are just like on a PDF document that's attached. So someone has to actually open the attachment to read it. That's frustrating for borrowers. Borrowers really just want to see everything in the email. Just put it right in the email. So I have been involved in several transactions where that documentation list on that PDF is very, very, very long. It's taken me a very long time to go through and type out nicely and organize it, but I've done that because I don't want that person to get frustrated. I want to keep recapping with them nicely in the email. When they send something in, take it off, recap with them, get those ones off, resend them the list. So that's what we do here. That's what I do when it comes to processing. There are times when people will send stuff in and, for whatever, for some reason, sometimes will send me loan applications in and they're blank. Like there's nothing written on it. I don't know if it's a difference between computer to computer or what's going on, but they're convinced it's filled out. They'll call like a little, "Hey, I'm sending you this. Why are you not getting it?" Maybe it is just a difference between computer to computer. But sometimes what happens is I think sometimes people accidentally forward me back the blank documents I send them instead of starting just a new email chain and sending them back to me. So I think sometimes that's the problem. So anyways, we always figure it out, but sometimes the doc collection can be a little tense sometimes. Sometimes people, and I gotta watch the way I word this, but sometimes people, and you can kind of tell who you're dealing with. Sometimes people will just send you stuff that's just absolutely like, it's horrible. It's like chicken scratch. It's like they took no time to go through the rehab budget and write it out or do their rent roll. It's so sloppy. Like sometimes you do have to say to people, "I'm sorry. Like I can't turn this in. I can't." And there's been certain times where like I've gotten a file together and I'm looking at things. I'm going through things. I'm making sure the leases match up with the rent roll and stuff. But if something is like really sloppy and you send that into a lender, it 100% shows them this person. They get the impression that, this is how this person does business. And I'm telling you, it can affect the loan file. I know it sounds silly, but you really have to watch what you turn in. You also got to watch extra documents you turn in that you didn't need to turn in. And I know a lot of brokers in this business do that, but a lot of times it just raises more questions when you send in documents the lender didn't ask for. So all I can tell you is with me being our main processor here, the other processor we have here, I really go through what I'm looking at and pay attention in every single page to make sure we're not missing everything. Now, am I going to miss something sometimes? Yes, I am. But I'm pretty good at processing docs who don't usually make many mistakes. So if I do once in a while, I just happen to be a human. But that's really it. That's the main thing about doc collection. I would say a lot of borrowers, when we go to quote them, and some of our lenders too, they actually want a tri-merge credit report up front. Some of them that we work with, they want that in order to issue a pre-approval. Well, we don't run credit here. So there are websites we can refer people to. There's an Experian website we refer people to. There's a Credit Check Total website we refer people to where they can get a tri-merge credit report themselves. Credit Check Total is a really nice website. I'm sorry, a really nice tri-merge credit report. It's only $1, but they do have to cancel the service within 7 days. They'll be charged $30. It's a really nice report, but again, they have to cancel it, which can get a little frustrating for them. But they're only paying $1 for it, so it is what it is. And sometimes, the scores on there aren't always as accurate. So when it comes to people sending me documents to prove their FICO scores or all their open and closed accounts, what I always tell people when they send this stuff in is, thank you for the information. Just be aware that whatever credit websites the borrowers or just regular civilians in this world have access to is nothing like the way lenders pull credit. And I wish there was more of a happy medium between both parties, but there's not. Whenever a borrower ever sends me their credit report that they've gotten somewhere on the web, and then a lender pulls it, I can tell you there's always typically a difference in the scores. Sometimes it's like a 30-point difference, and that can change their quote, of course. Sometimes there isn't a major difference, and it's okay. But just these websites out there like Credit Karma, all those websites, I don't know where they get their information from. I'm not a credit expert, and I tell people that all the time during the day. I don't know how credit works. What I know is that you have three FICO scores, and you have a list of all your open and closed accounts. That's what I know. But yeah, the scores just drastically are different from the stuff that, we have access to, you know, and whatever, however lenders can pull their credit. So sometimes, a lot of times, you know, people just call me, they're frustrated. They're like, well, I don't understand. What I sent you shows I have a mid FICO score 650, and now the lender's saying it's 620. And I just have to tell them that, you know, unfortunately, this happens on every single deal. And just the way lenders pull credit is just a much more official way. A lot of time what I'll ask the lender is, like, what credit system do you use to pull credit? Maybe it's like Avantis or whatever it is. And I'll just let the borrower know this is how they pull credit, you know, to try to give them something. If the lender will release a copy of the credit report to me, I'll always send it to the borrower so they can have it for their records. A lot of times lenders just don't release those, so there's nothing I can send. Next bullet point, in terms of processors, we already went over the doc collection, how sometimes that can be frustrating, you know. Processors, you know, which, you know, none of the IAPs, none of you guys have to work with the lender's processors, but I can tell you, we're very good at keeping track of documents here. We're very good, and we have systems in place to do that. And we have different document lists from over a different, like 100 different lenders we work with, so we really have to know what we're doing. But, you know, I'm telling you, the lender's processors, some of the lenders we work with, their processors are bad. Like, they're bad. And I can't tell you how many times I'll send stuff into lenders, and then they'll process or recap with me like a day or two later after I keep kind of following up with them, and will ask me for 5 things I already sent them, you know? So it can kind of be frustrating. You have to just kind of let it slide, or just everyone knows I just let it slide. I'm just like, attached here again, you know, just get it over to them. No point in starting any type of controversy over some documents. I have them, so I'll just get them to the lender. And this is just a point I wanted to bring up, because people get really agitated if you keep asking them for stuff they've already sent you, understandably so. But that's just another thing we do as quarterbacking their loan. Instead of me going forwarding that list right to the borrower and saying, hey, I need these things, and they sent me those 5 things already, I don't do that. I put the email down, I go into their file, I go through everything, and I'm like, I already sent her these 5 things because they're in here, and I know what I've sent and what I've not because I keep track of that. So then I resend it. So you just really have to pay attention to what you're doing, and that's another good thing to be working with a brokerage company that is understanding and paying attention to these documents, because I know if the lender's processors are doing it to me, they probably do it to direct borrowers as well. Again, it can become frustrating for them. There are so many times I shield people from silly emails lenders send me asking questions that we've already explained to them, we've already answered for them, or they keep asking for documents I've already sent. And sometimes they'll do it like 3 times in a row, and I'm like, hey, do you want to do a phone call real quick? I've already sent this to you a couple of times. Anyways, we're taking on that for the borrower so they don't have to deal with it. Next bullet point that can be frustrating, you know, after you've collected all the documents on the loan that are needed, all the documents from the lender, you're going to have to collect some title documents from the title company, insurance documents. Obviously, the appraisal needs to come back. If there was a survey, you would need that on the file. Once you've sent everything into the lender that they need, and the processor on their side, after they've gotten their act together, says, okay, I have everything, they submit it to their underwriting department. Now, underwriting is going to pick the file apart. Underwriters and people and deals that want to kill them. They want to find a reason to deny every single loan. And sorry, I had to drink some water. And, you know, they will come up sometimes with some crazy, crazy things. Sometimes on loans, you know, that we have to work with and combat. And that is just another part of our, you know, what we offer to our clients is we have experience working with so many different lenders that I could tell you by looking at certain things in a file, like this is not going to pass in their underwriting. I just already know that. And so do other people here in management that work with our lenders a lot. So, you know, whenever I see a red flag on a file, like a property was recently inherited to somebody, which isn't a problem, but if you're going into a permanent financing loan, it typically is because they don't have the seasoning. We have month-to-month leases. That could be a problem. Tenants are Section 8. Not a problem with every lender, but with some lenders it is. What else could I say? Tax liens are certainly need to be paid off at closing. Not a problem. We just have to address it up front and make sure we have the proper payoffs by the time of closing that are dated on the right date. liquidity issues. Someone may be getting a lot of cash out on a transaction. And surprisingly, a lot of our lenders have liquidity requirements on a refinance cash out. So basically, they're requiring you to have cash in your bank account, a certain amount, just to give you cash, which is kind of silly. But that is the requirement. I've gotten exceptions from lenders on that. Like, hey, this person's getting over $100,000 of cash. Do you think there's anything you could do on this liquidity requirement, or could you just give him less, you know, or her less, if that works? I've gotten exceptions on that, and then once the file was sent into underwriting, they denied the loan because of the liquidity requirement in that person's bank account. Now, I got it worked out, but it was a lot of back and forth with the lender and kind of, you know, save it, all the emails that we save, you know, kind of just basically sending them back to them, letting them know, on this date we were given this exception, we addressed this up front. You know, imagine if a borrower was dealing with a lender direct and they asked them for the exception and then the lender denied them after they've gotten everything in to go through underwriting. They would probably lose their mind and start screaming. Don't blame them. But these are just things we deal with. So lenders' underwriting departments can be a little tough. You have to expect it. It's just the way the business is. So when people call a little upset sometimes, I just have to explain that to them and they're fine. A lot of times there's just really minor things, honestly, that need to be fixed. Maybe the loan number is wrong on the insurance document. The lender's mortgagee clause isn't 100% correct. Not a big deal. Simple fix. Sometimes the entity documents don't add up for the lender. They don't understand why this person's a part of the entity and they're on the articles, but they're not on the operating agreement. And, you know, stuff like that we always try to catch in processing as well. But to a certain point, I'm not going to pick apart someone's entity documents when I'm trying to get their loan going. That's not really how you start a good relationship with somebody. There's just things that are going to come up in underwriting that you have to expect. So that's just something we always make clear to borrowers, just so everyone knows throughout the process that after I get everything I need, it all looks good, it is going to have to go to an underwriter. They may need some revisions. You know, if we want to get the deal done, we're going to have to make those revisions. So I had a deal actually a couple months ago where the borrower was just a one-person entity, and going through the whole entire loan process with the lender, this is not something I thought to ask them up front. They don't lend to one-person entities, apparently. They never told me that. We did send our intake form, and on our intake form it does ask who makes up the entity and what are their percentages. It clearly was that one person. It did not ask on their loan application at all the entity percentage split or anything. But anyways, they did know, and they had the entity documents on the file for over a month. This was a permanent rental loan. And during the underwriting process, their underwriters came back to me and denied the loan because it was a one-person entity. And so I almost lost my mind because I'm like, why didn't you tell me that, you know, 45 days ago? You've had the entity documents for 30 days. And they're, well, our loan committee is just, we're having a problem with one-person LLCs. So I just called the person and I just said, hey, do you have any family members, you wife, husband, kids, whatever, anyone you trust that we can just amend your operating agreement? Let's do a corporate resolution. Let's just add someone to your entity. But obviously, it's got to be someone you trust. You know, this is your company. Thankfully, they did. That's what we did. We amended the operating agreement. We added someone else to the entity. In 2 seconds, I made it to a two-person entity. Loan was approved. So those are just things you got to deal with. So let's skip by underwriting. That's what underwriting does. You're going to have to figure out, you're going to have to bob and weave when you're in underwriting to figure out problems. Experience documents is the next bonus point. We're going to wrap this up, get to questions. Experience is a big thing for rehabbers and ground-up construction. And again, I know I keep saying this, but we always quote people based on the experience they put on the intake form. There is a question on that intake form that says, can you prove this experience with HUD 1s or settlement statements? And a lot of times people put yes, and then throughout the loan process they can't. Well, it was under a different company that I did, and they have the HUD 1, but it's under their company. Like, they misunderstood the question. You know, where I'm asking, can you? Like, can you or an entity that you own on paper, can you prove this? Maybe I have to reword the question. I don't know. But, you know, when you get into the thick of things, you know, you deal with all different types of personalities. People interpret things differently. So a lot of times people are silent partners in things, And, you know, they, of course, that is experience because, you know, you are doing a deal with someone. It's your money. But if you're a silent partner and you're not on any documentation, it doesn't count to the lenders, unfortunately. So, yes, that can be frustrating. But we actually recently, to combat this issue, our quotes now that we give out for rehab deals and ground-up construction deals, now right in the quote, it says this is based on documentation of 3 sold properties in the past 3 years or however the lender bases their experience. We recently just changed that in the past month because, you know, we were doing this thing with borrowers back and forth where they're putting, yes, they have this experience, they can prove it, and then they can't because their name's not on any of these documents. And that's what we're looking for. So just as everyone knows, you know, we bob and weave here. As we see problems arising, we see miscommunication coming, you know, between us and borrowers and even lenders, you know, we change the intake forms. We make sure the quoting department understands this is a problem. Not a problem, but we need to make sure we harp on this a little bit more so everyone's on the same page. So next bullet point, insurance companies sometimes, I don't want to say this is a big frustration for anyone, but you know, in the deal, you deal with a lot of different third parties. And next bullet point is going to be title companies. You know, sometimes those people don't tell you. And again, I'm not an insurance agent, and I'm not a title agent either. So I understand in general what they need to do, of course, but I don't know 100% how to do their job, and I can't do their job for them. I'm not a licensed insurance agent. I'm not a licensed title professional. So, you know, I just, you know, in when it comes to a file, we get the documents in. Every lender we work with has requirements, how they want their title commitment done and all the other documents they want and what type of insurance they want. The first thing I always do on a file when I'm processing the files, of course, get the borrower their documents, but I always, in the first set of things that I ask them for is I need the contact information of their insurance rep, their title rep, if they have a lawyer, a realtor, because I want to reach out to those people right away. The first thing I do, and I've learned this the hard way, is I email the insurance rep, their insurance rep, I copy the borrower, I email them the lender's insurance requirements and exactly how they want it, the loan number, mortgagee clause. I do the same thing to the title rep. Because the last thing you want to do is, you know, you're working on a file, you know, you're talking to the insurance rep, trying to get the documents from them, following up from them. And then all of a sudden they say, well, hey, we don't issue insurance in a company name. We don't do that here. And I've had this happen to me before, and it wasn't that long ago. And, you know, I said to the title, the insurance rep, well, I emailed you the requirements, you know, weeks ago, and I put in the email, this loan has to close in the company name. This is a commercial loan. It's an investment loan. All of our borrowers are always closing in an entity name here. And that means everything has to match up. The insurance has to be in the entity's name. The title documents have to be in the entity's name. Everything has to match up. That's pretty simple. Just make sure the name is the same on every single page. Yeah, so sometimes, you know, things don't work out like that, you know. So now what I have done to be proactive, and we were already emailing them the requirements and already calling them to follow up to make sure they got them, but I just kind of harp a little more just to make sure, hey, your insurance company can issue insurance in an entity name, right? I always just kind of ask that now because when that happened to me, you know, we were like ready to close, and then this insurance agent was like, well, we don't issue policies in an entity name. Like, well, why didn't you tell me that like 3 weeks ago? Anyways, we found another insurance agent real quick to get it done so it wasn't a problem. Did a little bit of bobbing and weaving, but, you know, would rather have those things figured out earlier than later. Title reports can be a little frustrating on a deal. Every lender on a deal is always going to want a title policy, a lender title policy, and that's basically it. Just what we actually have a really good training class on title insurance, and it was done by a very large national title insurance company. And you know, title policies, what they do is they basically protect you, the lender, or the borrower if they get title insurance for anything that's happened in the past to the property. So any liens or any judgments or any weird thing, backwater, sewer bills, taxes, all that stuff that has ever been placed against that property on the day of closing, everything has to be 100% paid. That's why lenders always want a title policy because they don't want to inherit into their loan any weird liens or anything like that. So when, you know, we always try to get a preliminary title commitment up front from the title rep. That's why we get started on that right away as well. Sometimes it takes them sometimes to get together if one hasn't been done for some time. So there are several times where, you know, hey, we're working on a rehab deal. It has to close really, really quick. And before the title agent can get the report together, we're not going to slow down the deal. We get the appraisal order. We're recapping on docs. We're talking to the insurance agent, talking to both realtors. We're doing everything we could do. And then sometimes the title report comes back and there's a lien on the property. And sometimes it's a lien the seller has to pay off. You know, so that's fine. That's on them. You know, they're the ones that are holding up closing. But if it's a refinance, it's a loan, it's a lien that our borrower has to pay off. So, you know, that can sometimes understanding what the title company's been saying, because sometimes you're dealing with a lawyer there and they're using very fancy words. You're like, okay, just break it down to me very simply. There's a lien on the property, it needs to be paid. Who's responsible for it? You know? But sometimes it is our borrower that needs to, you know, have it paid off, and they're not aware that they have a lien, and, you know, of course, they're going to become a little upset, but again, that's between them and their title company. But, you know, I have a situation right now with a client where she's part of a company. Her father started a corporation, and then she became part of the company, you know, later as she got older. He unfortunately passed away, but now she's the sole owner of the company. And as we're going through this closing with her, it's a refinance deal. She already owns the company, and she owns the property that owns the company. There's liens or whatever he has inherited that are against her corporation now and this property. Now, she wasn't the one to have those things happen. You know, it was something that happened when he was alive that was placed in the company. But now that unfortunately he's not here and she's the owner of the company and of the building, the title company is basically telling her this is her responsibility to take care of. Now, she's upset, of course, but that's not something we could have predicted going into this deal. We have a question on our intake form that asks, do you have any liens, judgments, BKs, foreclosures, short sales, pending lawsuits, or are you in a lawsuit? We ask basically every question of something that could happen to people. But again, these things can be misinterpreted. Those things were on her father. She didn't think that they were going to follow her. But now that she is a part of this entity that was his, it does follow her. And that's how title reports work. So, again, can be a little frustrating. You guys are going to experience this when it comes down to title insurance. But don't worry. If it's something that can be resolved, I will always be able to figure out what the title company is telling us and what needs to happen. I can always tell the borrower as well. If it's something that's really, really complicated, sometimes I always, you know, do tell them you need to get a real estate lawyer involved, or if the title company has a real estate attorney, see if you can work with them to get these things resolved. And then just a couple last things here. Let's open up for some questions. You know, kind of, we just touched on title insurance and what title insurance is for. You know, a lot of times on title reports, you'll see that, you know, there's payoffs you got to get from, like, local governments, the state, the IRS, even the Department of Revenue. I've been involved in deals like that where people have had liens with the Department of Revenue. They're not always easy to get these payoffs. You know, the borrower really does have to call on their behalf, but I have been involved in loans where there was just so many payoffs between so many different departments that I was actually calling the state. I was calling the Department of Revenue. I had all the lien and docket numbers and was matching them up. And it is a little frustrating to get these payoffs from these government agencies because they are on their own time schedule. They do not care that you have a loan that has to close in 5 days. They don't care. Their response back to you is you should have done this quicker. yeah, we all should have, but, you know, we didn't know about these things until the title report came back. So that's just when you got to work with all parties in the loan. You may have to call the seller, or you may have to call the payoff lender if it's refinanced, and explain to them what's going on. If they want to get that paid off, they're going to have to give everyone the time to get this done. And there's a lot of times in this business where you have to be very professional with people, but you have to be firm with people. This is not a business for the weak of heart. If you're a sensitive person, you're going to have to get over it, because there's going to be times where things are going to get heated. That's just how this works. And that's really it. That's kind of like the last bullet point. The only other thing I wanted to mention is sometimes we have borrowers that are dealing with, you know, local zoning issues with land and properties, and those things need to be resolved before loans can close. So, you know, that it just is what it is. And then one thing, you know, as everyone knows, we always get a fee agreement with our borrowers here going into a loan. Just so everyone's aware, I always file that fee agreement with the title company. As soon as I reach out to them, I file our fee agreement, our wiring instructions with them. And I can tell you, even though I do that with every single title company, the lenders clearly know we're involved in the deal because we're recapping on docs, we're doing everything. I can't tell you how many times I get a finalized HUD-1 or settlement statement and our fee is not on there. It's like, you know, you did all that coordinating with everyone and saving everyone and all everything, and nobody put your fee on there. The lender just didn't tell the title company. The title company didn't pay attention to your fee agreement, even though you sent it like 5 times. It happens all the time. So I always make sure we're always involved in every transaction. I always make sure I'm in 100% contact with that title company, doing everything I can to assist them. And I will always get a copy of the HUD-1 or the settlement statement prior to closing to review it to make sure our fee's on there. Just make sure things make sense. Things have already paid for. They already paid for. They're not being paid, you know, not paying for them twice. We ask for a copy of the earnest money check from our borrowers just to make sure the title company's crediting for them for that. That was already put down. So this is why we always need copies of everything. It's really to protect the borrower, to make sure that we can get it to the lender for them in a timely fashion. If the lender wants to ask us for it 5 times, they're asking us for it 5 times, not the borrower. We're trying to eliminate frustrations, and that's really what we do here, as well as we're a total quarterbacking service. But final thing about the title company is I always have to call them prior to closing to verify our wiring instructions, because we're not ever physically at a closing since we broker loans nationwide. But I just want everyone to know, you know, sometimes after all of this that you do to get a deal done, your fee is not even on the HUD-1, you know? So I got an email and call again. Hey, remember me? I was the person that helped you close this loan and coordinate with the lender and the borrower. Everyone, can you please put my fee on the HUD-1, please? I'd like to get paid and pay our reps. That's really it. Those are a list of a lot of frustrations you will experience in this deal, but I can tell you when you do deal with them, when you get all of them done, everyone in the deal is happy. The borrower is happy. They're like, thank you so much for getting this done for me. So, you know, it can be a little bit of a back and forth thing. It can be a little bit of frustrating, but when you get a client's loan done, it's a really rewarding thing. So that being said, I'm going to open up for questions. Nobody here has to quarterback a transaction. No one has to do that. That's up to the management staff. We do keep you guys copied on emails. You know, and I know there's things that will probably come up where you may not understand it. That's okay. Just please ask the question. We'll get it answered for you. So, all right, guys.
Hi, Megan.
Oh, hey, go ahead. Good. Start with the question.
Yeah, this is Mo. May I ask a question?
Yeah.
Megan, I am dealing with a client. It's your lead. And in fact, you sent she submitted another form because she wanted to loan for 2 properties. This is for a rental investment property. Her problem is she works in a government department. I'm not revealing her. She's on CRM, but for confidentiality. But she's working as a director in a government department. Her FICO is low. Her FICO is 580. And that is because of her son's education loan. Otherwise, she has a good pay, and she and the rental property which she wants to buy has a very good return. It's about 10% return on it, and it's seasoned. The rent has been there for about more than 6 months, more than a year. But how do we go about it? Because our loan department has just turned it down, and I was just wondering because I thought that we can make some good points on that. Because she is not bankable, obviously, with 580 FICO. So
yeah.
That was it.
Okay, so can I ask you a couple questions real quick?
Yeah, sure.
Is it a refinance or a purchase deal?
It's a purchase deal.
Okay. If it was a refinance, we'd have a little bit of a better chance because she already owns the property, and if there was some cash out there, that might help her. So it's a purchase. Her FICO is 580. I get it from her son's student loan. I hear that a lot during the day. What type of deal is she looking to do? Is she looking to do a rehab deal? Is she purchasing something
no.
that's already rented out? Yeah.
Yeah, it's she does, the property doesn't need a rehab. She
okay.
just wants to buy it for the rent, and the rent is about 10%. And the rent is seasoned. It's more than a year that the property is on the rent. And she has a good pay because she is on a director level in a government department. And her down payment is also not an issue. I mean, she is willing to go up to 35%.
Okay. What is the property type? What is she trying to buy?
It's a single family. She wants to buy two properties. In fact, the second
okay.
form when she put in, you referred it to me with your comment on the CRM. And for the time being, she wants to go for the, because since I told her, you have to come up at least a minimum down payment of 35%. So she said, okay, let's go for the single family home first. So it's a single family home, yeah.
Okay, and it's 100% rented out, obviously.
Yes, for more than a year.
Since it's just one unit, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
And the rent
is
very good. It's about 10% of what she's asking.
Yeah, so I understand. So our permanent rental lenders, unless your FICO score is really like 660 or higher, maybe 650 or higher, actually another thing I got to ask you, what's the purchase price on this property?
I am not exactly at this point of time, sorry. It's in the form. It's in the CRM. I can email it to you if you're interested. It's on the CRM. I'm Mo. So if
yeah,
you go on my
what
CRM,
is what is
yeah.
her name? What's the borrower's name?
Gloria Branch.
Gloria and B.
Branch.
Branch. Okay. I'll look her up. She's registered to you, right?
Yes, and in her form she committed for a lesser down payment. Now she's willing to resubmit the form with a 35% down payment. But the only problem is her FICO score. But that is where we can make money. I mean, frankly.
No, I hear you. We're this is gonna honestly depend on the purchase price. Because her FICO is really not at a level where you can put her into something permanent, I mean, we do have one rental lender we work with that will go down to a 620 mid-FICO score. I can't put her in something permanent until she gets her FICO up. What she could
okay.
do is she could add someone maybe to her entity, maybe she's married, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
that has better FICO, like maybe 650 or higher, and we could go off their FICO score. That would work.
I asked her. I think she's separated.
Okay, that's not happening. Not a big deal. I mean, I don't know if she has any other family, basically, that she'd be willing to add or another real estate partner or anything.
No.
But maybe,
okay. No, I don't think so, yeah.
Well, then if it's just her and that's where her FICO is, it is what it is. She can only go into a hard money program, and most of our hard money bridge lenders only do a 65% LTV. So I understand you told me she has the 35% down. But she's
she's willing to. In her original, sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
In her original submission, she didn't mention that, but now she is willing to come up with 35% down.
Well, that's fine. That might be why Loans kicked it out, because I don't know what the form was, just so you know, because I don't always monitor the Loans email. I didn't monitor this, or I didn't respond to you on this one. But
no, you sent me another form from her. Because she submitted another form, she was interested to buy two properties. But now, since because of a low FICO and high down payment, she is just looking for the one property for the time being. But her pay is very good. She can provide us W-9.
Okay, I'm not finding her in the system. You said Gloria? Gloria?
Yes, Gloria. Gloria Branch. NIH. She is Gloria Branch at NIH.
Okay, I'm going to still keep trying to search for her. I have there's a Gloria Kirk that's coming up. There's a Gloria Sancho. Would you just mind emailing? Yeah, go ahead.
The one who has the email with NIH.
There's like 30 Glorias in the CRM.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Yeah,
okay.
No.
Okay.
Do you mind?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Okay, you know what? Actually, I think I just found her while we were on the phone. Let me look over this. Mo, and I'm going to task myself to get back to you by tonight on this. Maybe there's something we can do for her, but because of where her FICO is, I could only put her in a hard money program, you know? We actually have a couple other bridge lenders that would do a 75% LTV on this, but her mid-FICO score would need to be 600 or higher, and it's at 580. She's not there, so she's really close.
Stop carrying this cookies, man.
Yeah, she's really close, but honestly, she really should just add someone to her entity, even as like a 1% member, and we could get her better terms. But if it's just her, she's going to need 35% down for the closing costs. And it's really going to depend what her purchase price is, because if her purchase price on her property is too low, like her minimum loan amount has to be at least $75K. So if the purchase price on the property is $75K, that's not going to work.
Yeah, I think it's
so
more.
I can look over this one.
Yeah.
I'm going to get back to you, Mo.
We're not getting a toy for $10.
Tonight,
great,
but do you have any other questions?
Yeah, one more,
yes,
please.
Yes.
I have one more client. She.
Hello.
Yeah, I have another client. She wants a wholesale loan. It's about $1 million loan she is looking for, and we sent an offer with 4 points: 2 points for the lenders and 2 points for ourselves. And she's not ready for those 4 points. Can we do something about that?
We could lower ours to 1. Yeah. I mean, we don't have to charge 2 points. We could certainly do it. But why does she need a wholesale loan? Is she not able to assign her contract?
She is a friend of a broker, and they work like that. The broker finds her a good deal, and then she just does the wholesale loan. You know, they just make money that way. I don't know. That's what she told me.
Yeah, is she related to the buyer or seller at all? Is she related to party A, party C at all?
No. That I particularly asked her, no. And she filled her form and she mentioned it. Her address is totally different. Her surname and everything is different than the buyer. Seller.
Did you send it up? The wholesale short form is really simple. It's like 7 questions. Did you send that into them at all?
I did send the information. We got we got an offer also from our loan department. But the only point was our commission and the lender's commission, lender fee and our fee. That is where she was upset. She said it's too high. Can we lower that or no?
Can you email me her name and I'll find out in the CRM who was on it. I have no problem lowering our fee to 1 point. That's a 10 grand fee. You know?
Oh, wonderful. Please check with the lender also, because I think if we can make it 1 point each, then the deal is done.
I can tell you the lender wants 1 point. All of our wholesale lenders do 2 points. So we can't ever negotiate lender points. We can negotiate ours. But I can just tell you, I've dealt with them all the time. They won't, unfortunately, lower it to 2. But here's the thing. If you don't mind just emailing me her name, her
I'll
form,
I'll definitely do that. Yeah,
I will still ask. I'll just ask anyways, and I'll share the response with you so you can see.
Yeah. There is another one, Martin Harris. Sorry, I'm taking a lot of your time. There were these deals which I wanted. I thought they were done, and they're still stuck with. We sent him an offer, and he said it's too high. His FICO was 720. It was a rehab loan. So Martin Harris is his name. So I don't know if you can have a look. Or should I say, I'll send the detail on the email. Is your email is Megan?
Yeah, mine's mcraichy@11capitalfinance.com.
Okay, great. I'll send you an email within a couple of minutes. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mo. All right, guys.
Yes, Megan.
Yeah.
I have a question regarding, and how can we be assured that we're exhausting all of the lenders when I'm submitting a deal? And I guess this is an inexperienced kind of lack of knowledge question, but my concern is that when I read guidelines or we get advertisements for lenders, and they're always saying this might work, case by case, maybe. Then we put all the explanations on the short form, and it's immediately rejected. And my question is, just like humans, you know, we make mistakes. How can we be assured that we're exhausting all of the 110 direct lenders, 20,000, before we just so quickly say, nope, can't do it? And
I hear where you're coming from. So right now, everything is basically a manual process. You know, like we have to actually go to those lenders one by one and see if they can do this. So there's certain things that, you know, we can try to overcome, and there's certain things that I know for a fact we can't overcome. Can you give me a little information about the deal?
Well, it's not a specific deal. It's just in general. It just seems like, for example, I'll read a guideline that says you have to have a 660 credit score, but we may do a case by. And whenever I hear a but or maybe, I'm taking every chance and say, let me get it in.
Yeah.
But then when it gets to the loan department, it's like just quick, nope, can't do it. And my only concern, and it's an ignorant question because I just don't know, is how can we be assured that we're exhausting all of our lenders to see if we can get this deal done, or we're just taking a quick, like, okay, we don't want to waste any time. Let me just say, no, we can't do it. It's too hard. Boom.
Well,
I know that's not happening, but how can we assure that? I
hear you. When someone says no from the loans email, are they explaining why they're saying no?
Yes. Yes, always. It's always an explanation, but I guess my concern is that's from one lender, but if we have over 110 direct lenders and over 20,000 private investors, and it's one of those guidelines where it could be a case-by-case basis, or it could be if you have an explanation, we may. So I'm like, so one may not, so how can we be assured that it's really being exhausted with all of the lenders?
There's certain problems, just so you know, that are not going to work with every lender, just so you're aware. And I want to take that 20,000 private investors thing off of our website, because you got to understand private firms that want to do deals are looking for deals like $10 million plus. You know, they're not looking for small deals. So I want that taken off our website, because someone who has a $100,000 deal, which is not a problem, thinks that we can just go to some private investor on the street and get their deal funded, and that's not the case. We deal with like real lending institutions, like real lenders, you know? So I can just tell you there's certain things that are just going to be a no with every lender, and that's going to really kind of come down to that line about like tax liens, BKs, foreclosures, stuff like that. Sometimes we can resolve those issues if it's a cash out scenario, and that scenario can be solved at closing. That's definitely a possibility. But I mean, I don't know if you can give me any more information as to why they're telling you it's denied, because I could elaborate on it more.
Let me give you an example. Let's say I have a loan and let's say it's a credit score. Let's say the credit score is supposed to be 660, and I look at ABC lender and it says, but however, we will make exceptions, so I put this long explanation in the short form explaining why this credit score is not 660. And the only reason I put that explanation in there is because I saw the guideline that says we may, it might, maybe, case by case. So if you give me any glimmer of hope, I'm going to submit it. But as soon as it gets to the lender, it's like just no. And my concern is, are we checking with every single lender, or is our experience level so great that we already know what every single lender has?
I mean,
that's great. I mean, that's fine. That'll be incredible. But I know we all are not perfect. So.
No, believe me, I understand where you're coming from. And so that being said, there's a lot of submissions that come into Loans email every single day. And we, all of us here, do our best to get to all of them in a timely fashion. And if someone's telling you no, they really should explain why. So I'll talk to the intake team about that just to make sure we're doing that. Do we always explore every single lender that can do a file? No, to be honest with you, we don't. But I can tell you the reasons we don't sometimes are just because there's things that, you know, I've been doing this for some time. Chris has been doing this for some time. The other people that monitor loans email have been doing this for some time that I know we can't resolve. So the 650 thing, you know, it's going to depend what type of loan it is, just so you know. There's certain things we could get around. Like, I could deal with a lower FICO maybe. Now, first of all, I don't know what type of loan it is. I don't know if it's a rehab loan. I don't know if it's a permanent loan. I might be able to deal with that on the permanent loan, but then I got to know, is it a refinance person? How long does the does the bar meet the seasoning requirements? Do they also meet the minimum loan requirement? Do they also meet the population requirement? So there's a lot of times we can bob and weave, but they still have to hit those other requirements.
Got it. Now, I want to make it real clear. I always get great explanations. I always get great explanations from the loan department. I just wanted to be assured that we're looking. You know, I'm like one of those perfect people that I'm going to look under every single rock to see if we can get this thing done. I just don't want to hear no.
Yeah,
but
and I totally hear
my ignorance, you know.
No, this is just part of the learning process, and that's why that was bullet point number one on the thing. The loan emailed back and says no. Now, I really do hope the managers managing the loans email are giving everyone valid explanations because that is our learning process. That being said, there's a lot of times we can deal with things. I mean, if the guy with the 650, could you give me a little bit more about his deal so I could explain further why it's
It wasn't even a specific deal. It was just overall because I'm always getting good explanations. And all the explanations from the loan department make perfect sense. My only concern wasn't a specific deal. I just wanted to make sure because when you see that 20,000 and when you see 110, you're like, I wonder if there's one that will do this. You know, and that's, like I said, it's a question based on my lack of experience pretty much. I just wanted to make sure that we was looking under, that we was exhausting all of our lenders. That's all I was basically
saying. And I hear you. And here's what I can tell you, though. You know, if someone has a larger loan, like a loan, you know, maybe closer to $1 million, there's more things that, okay, so let's compare $1 million loan to $100,000 loan. There's nothing wrong with either loan, you know. There's more exceptions sometimes that lenders on $1 million loan are willing to make than lenders on $100,000 loan. I'm not saying
it
could be harsh. I don't know what the deal size was. Yeah, you
makes
submitted.
Sense. Makes sense.
But I can tell you, the larger the deal, there's more. We just know from working with them for so long, there's more things we might be able to smooth out and get to slide as long as we properly explain it to them. But, you know, if someone's trying to buy something, it's like a $75,000 loan, their credit's not there, you know, the lender may slam the phone on me, you know. I've had that happen to me before.
Right. No, I understand.
And I'm sorry to keep asking you about more about the deal, but if I knew more about the deal, I could answer your question very specifically.
And it wasn't a specific deal. It's just like if I submitted like over maybe, let's say, 50 or 70 short forms, I just wanted to make sure, and I know it's a numbers game, I was just making sure that, okay, maybe hopefully we're exhausting every single lender. But every explanation has made sense. So you guys always do a great job on that. I was just making sure that we was looking under every rock. And, again, it's an ignorant question because I'm new.
No, it's not. And I want you to understand that I understand your frustration. My first year in this business, I met 400 real estate investors face-to-face in 2011. I actually shook 400 people's hands. I have a whole binder full of all their business cards. And I just followed up. And I can't tell you how hard I struggled to get a handful of deals to close. So I have been in your shoes. I mean, 2011 was not an ideal year to get involved in lending because everything was still messed up from the market collapse of 2008. But I can tell you, like, I was submitting deals that I knew it was right in Velocity's wheelhouse. I knew this was right in Apex's wheelhouse, and they found every reason to deny them. I do understand your frustration. But if something
you guys do a great job. You guys do it. I couldn't do what you do for 2 seconds. I would go bald. I'm already almost. I was completely
just,
bald.
You know, it's okay. There's days like I do kind of feel like that, but I'm just like, you know, I'm not like a police officer getting shot at. I'm not in war, so I have to remind myself sometimes. It could always be worse. But what I can say to you is if you don't feel you're getting the right explanation, please just email back into the loans department. I know it can be a little frustrating trying to find that first one to go through, especially because when you're dealing with investors, like if you ever meet people face-to-face or even talking to them on the phone, I've spoken to thousands of real estate investors on the phone.
Wow.
Everyone is so adamant about their deal, and it stinks telling someone no. You know, it stinks. What I always try to say to them is, look, if this was the issue, can you add someone to your entity for the credit? Can you add someone to your entity for the experience? Go to a meetup event and meet other real estate investors that you can partner with and do deals together, and we'll do it under both of you in the company. Form a new company. Both can be 50-50, you know? So I always do try to offer people advice. Maybe whatever the turndown is, maybe you can go back to that investor and say, look, here was maybe the reasons getting kicked out, but can you partner with someone that would overcome that issue?
You'll probably end up with,
and that does happen. That happens all the time. And, again, you guys are doing a great job. I just want to make sure we're just exhausting all our lenders. That's all.
Yeah, and one thing I just want to add, I'm going to get to other questions, but I just want everyone on the phone to know we are working very hard with our tech department to build a crazy, crazy pricing engine with all these lenders we work with, and it's been a lot of work. But we are trying to build a very, very sophisticated, you know, now pricing is done manually. This is how this business is done. You know, it's manual, unfortunately. I mean, you do see lenders out there. A lot of our lenders, like Lending One, you know, even Lending Home is a rehab lender. You can go on their websites, you can fool around with their tools, and you can get basically an automatic quote just by being on their website. You know, if there was such a pricing tool for, like, every single lender we worked with, which is basically just a digital version of their rate matrix, how much cooler and easier would this business be? So that is something we are working to make sure we are under, turning over every rock. There's never a deal that we want to give up on here. There's never a deal I want to give up on here. If there's any way I can make something work or save something, I will. So
awesome.
I just want everyone
awesome.
To know that we are working on a pricing engine. Do I know when it's going to be ready? No, I don't. It's going to take some time, but there's a lot of people here putting a lot of work into it so that we will have something as that as a group, and we'll have something that no other brokerage shop has or has access to. And my goal is, let's get it's based off the intake forms. Let's get them quotes from 5 rehab lenders right away. If I had the pricing engine tool built, which it's in the works, I could get them quotes, you know, from multiple lenders at once. And at that point, like, if you can hit someone with 5 different quotes, they're going to go with you. You've provided them too much customer service, you know. So.
Awesome. You guys are doing a great job. I appreciate everything you're doing, and we'll keep this movement moving.
All right. Thank you so much for being on the call.
All right. Thank you, Megan. Bye-bye.
Yeah,
Megan?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, hello, Megan. I got a question from Richard.
Yeah, hey, Richard, go ahead.
Hey, one of my leads, after qualifying them or pre-qualifying them, their parent companies are in 2 states in the U.S., but their project is in Mexico. Is that, it's a $10 million project. Is that a no-go?
So, yeah, so if their deal is not in the United States, we really only work with lenders that lend in the United States.
Okay. I just
so that,
wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, that would just, you want to focus on deals just in the United States, and you want to know why. I don't know what the lending rules are of Mexico. I don't know what the lending rules are of our Canada. I don't know if you need any special license to broker loans there or how that works. So I don't really know what we're up against. And here's another thing. I don't know how title companies work down there. I mean, I'm assuming it's kind of the same process. But how do we know?
Well, no worries.
What?
I was going to say, no worries. I appreciate that. I'm just saying, bottom line, it was one of our leads, but I just wanted to let them know, you know, before we got too involved with the short forms and all that other good stuff, because, look, we don't do anything out of the U.S.
Sorry. Just close my
CRM file, you know, and just call it a day.
You know, exactly. You know what, Richard? I'm really glad you said that, because if you guys, you know, I'm so glad you said that. Yeah, so to reiterate, yeah, the project does have to be in the United States. You know, if you guys are getting leads, and again, I can't control the leads that the company buys. Some of them are going to be great. Some of them are going to be horrible. You know, that's how it is. What I can tell you is if you go out to a real estate event and you meet 50 people in a room at a meetup, a group for real estate investors, every single one of those people in that room who are real people will want your business card. I can tell you that. But that being said, with the leads, I think they are good practice for everyone if you're just getting your feet wet with talking to people and stuff. But if you hear something like that, like Richard just said, he obviously heard this deal is not in the country, he didn't waste his time by taking the intake form. He just said, hey, you know, I'm thinking in my head that might be an issue. Let me check real quick before, you know, you waste your time. You can always do that. I know that it can be frustrating sometimes taking an intake form just for someone to come back and say no. You know, so if you see something or hear something on the deal that the person's saying that you think is a little wonky, why don't you tell them, why don't we set up a call tomorrow? I want to check with, you know, someone in management just to make sure, you know, we can do what you're telling me before you waste your time filling out an intake form, you know? Another thing you guys can ask right away. Yeah, of course. Another thing you guys can ask right away is this a purchase or a refinance? If someone tells you it's a refinance, you're always going to have a better shot of getting a refinance deal done. Again, you know, someone's got lower credit. They already own the property. They already own the property. Hopefully there's some equity in it. It's not maxed out. Now, if it's maxed out, no such luck. But you're always going to have a better chance getting a refinance deal done than a purchase, because on purchases, they need money. No. Anyways, Richard, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you have more questions?
Well, people were being specific. I'm new to your company, but I've been in the business for many, many years. But I have a client. He's in surgery today, but we just got to get him, help him get an entity in his name before I submitted the short form to. I don't like wasting anybody's time, so I'm just following the logistics of the forms. But he owns the properties, did a lot of repairs. He's got a hard money situation, which is like $205,000. Property's worth over $1 million. He's at a 12% loan. He wants to refinance it. So I should write it up as a permanent, because all the structures are complete now. He built like 9 cabins and 6 RV, you know, spots and this type of thing in Montana.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's what he's done. So the project has been completed. There's rental income coming in for the cabins that he owns already or that have been built. So my question was, I should write that up as a permanent.
Yeah, because he obviously wants to get out of that hard money loan, and it sounds like from talking to you, all the rehab is done.
Yeah.
So that's the key with our permanent rentals, rental lenders. As long as all that rehab is done, that's great. Obviously, it's better if it's leased up. But we do have a couple programs on our product sheet that even if the property is not rented out, they will still do the loan. They'll just go off the local market rent. So number 15, we have a one-month seasoning rental program. I got to see if they're in Montana. Montana, is that M-O?
M-T.
M-T, M-T, yes, they're in Montana. We have two lenders in Montana. The one, well, just so you know, the one commercial lender actually will allow him to close in his personal name. So that would be program 15. So he doesn't actually have to create an entity. I guess the biggest thing, since you said Montana, because I've been out there skiing when I was younger, we just want to probably, if you want to even email in the address and just like some basic information, like, you know, what's the property worth, how much debt's on it, his mid-FICO score has to be 62 or higher for this program. I think the first thing we should do is just get the population checked out, just to make sure it's in a population that they can do.
Okay.
Just because you said Montana, I've been out there, like, some places in Montana, there's nothing out there, you know?
No, this is Troy, Montana. It's right by Libby. I'm very familiar with it. My father was from Troy, Montana, back in, you know, on the basketball team in the 50s, that type of stuff. Our grandfather was the head forest ranger in Libby, so I'm kind of familiar with that real estate area over there.
Yeah.
So.
I'm not familiar with that.
But that's not a problem.
But yeah,
I can get you that information.
Yeah, thank you. As long as it's just a decent population, you know, it shouldn't be a problem. I went to Montana years ago, and where I stayed was just like there was nobody there.
So, oh no. That's why they call it the big sky country. You know,
it was.
you get a big, well, if you're a coffee drinker, you get a big latte, about 4 of them, and you probably cross the state by the 5th one,
yep.
So it's a long way.
Yeah. So we have a lender for him, and we might actually even be able to help him. He may not have to close the entity, which would be good, because if he has to close the entity, then he'd have to pay transfer tax if the property's in his personal name. Yeah, that's just how it works. But if we can get the, you know, if his mid FICO score is 660 higher, if, you know, there's not a lot of debt on the property and it works out, and if, as long as the population checks out, you know, that'd be great. He could actually close in his personal name. So just so everyone knows, not a lot of our commercial lenders allow a borrower to close in their personal name, and that's why we always teach that they don't. But once in a while, some of our lenders do allow that to happen. So it just depends on the lender.
Megan, can I ask a quick question?
Yeah, go ahead.
At what amount do we not have to take a short form and just send the loan to Marty?
Because Marty deals with bigger balance deals?
Yes.
That's a good question. I would just say, you know, I mean, if someone's asking probably for a loan like over $5 million, that's something I would certainly just kind of – I mean, Marty's still going to need the basic information on the deal, though. He's still going to want to know what he's dealing with, you know?
I mean, if the lender, mm-hmm. if the borrower is sending me an executive summary and a pro forma and the financials on the whole deal, mm-hmm. Do they still have to fill out a short form?
I mean, as long as – I don't want to make anyone duplicate anything or make borrowers duplicate anything, because that I understand it can become frustrating. As long as their executive summary is going over the basics of what our intake form is, you've probably looked at a lot of executive summaries from real estate investors, and so have I. And although I think their executive summaries are great, it doesn't really give me any information about the sponsors of the loan. And if I don't have any information about the sponsors of the loan, that's 50% of what I need to know in the loan. You know, I need to know who's behind the company, things about them. But I mean, if you want to just send it to Marty to have him to review, because Marty likes working on bigger balance stuff. Marty actually closed a really, really large loan at the beginning of this year. I don't really have a lot of experience with the larger balance stuff. I mean, I've always stuck to the, you know, real estate deals, really like $300,000 to $2 million. That's always where I've always made my consistent money every single month, although I've done a $50,000 real estate deal too. But yeah, if you want to just send it to Marty, go ahead. I would just say, you know, I don't know if there's information about the sponsor on the loan. Maybe you can get a bio or something from them, but that's also something really important, because a lot of executive summaries I've reviewed talk a lot about the project, but not a lot about the sponsors behind the loan, you know?
Okay.
I don't know if some of times they do have bios about the sponsor on a loan, but maybe it doesn't. But just go ahead, send it to Marty and see what he thinks. He likes that larger balance stuff, you know. But
okay.
I don't want to deter you, because I mean, if it was a $5 million real estate deal, even though I've never closed anything myself personally over $2 million, I'm not saying that we couldn't do it. It just depends what type of deal it is, you know.
The reason I asked, because I. Yeah, you know, I mean, I submitted the $370-some million loan package, and the guy, when I asked him about the short form, he was like, everything on the short form is in the executive summary, and I felt like a butt asking for it when it was already there.
I hear you. I hear where you're coming from. You know, when you deal with people that have larger loans, sometimes they are like that, you know, they feel since they have a larger loan, they're very, very important. So yeah, I mean, if someone's giving you like some pushback on a larger loan, again, just send it to Marty, see what he thinks. But just like, you know, there's a lot of times where real estate investors feel like they're telling you what you need to know, but they're it's not all on their executive summary. It's happened to me like a million times.
Okay, thank you.
So maybe it is. Just look over it yourself and see what's missing. But if you're feeling uncomfortable and you need someone to guide you through it, and bigger deals can kind of be like that. Those people are very, you know, they have a big deal. Just let Marty guide you through it, you know?
Okay, thank you.
Of course.
Yeah. Megan, real quick, Richard.
Yeah,
I can say Richard again. So that gentleman that just asked you that question, I can confirm what you just said. I have a big project in, like a $14, $15 million project. I wasn't positive on it. I just submitted the brief summary to Marty. He responded back to me, gave me kind of specifics what to do once I got short form, and just said, hey, just send it to me directly. And
so you,
that's how
you
he
already
handled
dealt with
it.
Marty? Yeah, you dealt with Marty on a big deal? Okay.
Yeah, I'm working with him right now, but that's what I did, like that gentleman. I mean, because that's the same way I know how to, with people like that. I've been on Mercer Island for like 30 years in Seattle. That we do nothing but multi-million dollar homes and clients, and that's how they are. But if they gave you that much information, you can fill out everything on the short form yourself, and there's a couple questions that are missing. Then you can call them back and apply conversation, just get those questions answered. But you got most of them already, you know, self-explanatory in your hand. But again, Marty did help me out, you know, really well, because I just sent him the really brief particulars, what the people were trying to do. Hey, is this something we can do? They got $2 million to invest. Is that enough? And he told me how to proceed, but he said, once you get everything answered on the short form, please send it to me directly. And
Yeah. Marty
so
likes those
what,
deals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Richard, thanks for that. You know, I can just tell you guys, you know, I know everyone gets enamored by these big deals, and I'm not someone who's ever had a lot of success closing big deals. I've never closed more than a $2 million real estate deal. But I can just tell you the reason I stick to the small balance deals is because I know the fees obviously are smaller, but that's where you will consistently close. If you can work on a large deal for 6 years, a month, you know, if it doesn't close, it's a really, really painful thing to be a part of. So Marty has, like, that experience working on big deals, so he's definitely the guy to go to. But I would just say, you know, there's nothing wrong with a $400,000 commercial loan, you know? So, guys, I know we've been on the phone now for about an hour and a half, a little over an hour and a half. I'm going to let everyone go. I'll send out this recording. But if anyone has any questions still, please just get them into loans. I will answer them. I'll send out this recording. And, again, thank you to everyone for being on the call today.
Thank you for your time, Megan.
Of course, guys. Thank you so much. Bye.